Peter Godbold killing this hour.
Oh, I'm looking so forward to it. And, you know, kind of some of this stuff that we were talking about, you know, with this guy, you know, the boy thing and whatnot, that kind of plays into the track of the day tonight, which I think I hope everyone will get a good giggle out of.
Well, I just don't. And I don't just bring things up for no good reason, John.
Oh, were you setting me up again? Oh, funny that.
Go figure. So we'll see you on the other side, brother.
All right, Matty. Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. The ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Fox Up here for a Monday night or Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, all depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble, such as it is. And we got a lot of stuff to cover today, but I tell you, I have a very, very special track of the day today. We're going to get a little funky. And I don't know if you caught it's up at Crooks and Liars, it's up at Huffington Post, the really, really great opening skit from Saturday Night Live this past weekend, the Petraeus testimony bit that they did, and I mean, no one was shown any slack on all sides. Absolutely, one of the best skits that I've seen them do. You know, the Hillary Clinton character, you know, looking down the camera, trying to convince us all that she was, you know, against the war from the beginning, and the kind of kissing up to Barack Obama because they all believe, well, he's going to be the next president. So I was looking around for a track of the day, and I stumbled across this one, and I said, ah, this has to be it. This has to be it. One of my favorites, Parliament. There's a track called Chocolate City. And it's the opening line that made me think this. And, you know, some might say it's bad taste. I don't. I think that this is just, this song could end up having brand new meaning if, as some people believe, Barack Obama could be our next president. And just the opening line, and you'll hear it, just like, Chocolate City. What's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? And I just kind of, I love Parliament. This track is from 1975. You can find it on either the album that was originally released on, Chocolate City, or you can find it on the great compilation that I have of Tear the Roof Off, the Best of Parliament 74 to 80. And in just great Parliament tradition, it's got those wonderful, wonderful vocal harmonies, incredible groove, great kind of, you know, waka, waka, waka guitars, and George Clinton, you know, just the granddaddy. I so love that man. He's a classic. And I just think that this track is just great, and this opening line, I think, could be used in, let's say, some user-created media, if it comes down that Barack Obama is the nominee. Now, I'm not endorsing anyone in particular. I got to say that I'm leaning a particular direction. And the reason why I'm not endorsing is neither of the two guys that I really wanted were allowed a fair fight in the game. So whoever the candidate is that our party decides on, or the Democrats decide on, I will vote for. And part of me does kind of lean towards Barack Obama, because I think no matter how much I might not agree with him on certain issues, and there are many, just the generational change and the culture change that it could represent could be not everything that the country needs, but it could help. So kick back. This is about 5.5 minutes of just, you know, it's Parliament. It's just funky. It's great. It's solid. It's wonderful. Making me think of the lyric from the Saul Williams album, thinking back when brothers had space helmets for hair, and talking of the mothership. And I just love this stuff. So without further ado, from the album Chocolate City, the track Chocolate City. Roll it, Bob.
Oh, what's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? To each his reach, and if I don't cop, it ain't mine to have. But I'll be reaching for you, because I love you, CC. Right on. There's a lot of chocolate cities around. We've got Newark, we've got Gary. Somebody told me we got L.A. And we're working on Atlanta. You're the capital.
Daddy loved
ya. Yeah,
Daddy loved
ya. Moving in on me.
Daddy loved ya.
Can't you feel my breath?
Daddy loved ya.
All up around. around your neck. Hey, CC, they say you jive and game and can't be changed. But on the positive side, you're my piece of the rock and I love you, CC. Can you dig it? Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah. We ain't alone, yeah. Moving in around, yeah. God bless CC and his yellow suburbs. Black, brother Black, blood even. Yeah, just funny. Get down. Blood to blood, players to ladies. The last percentage count was 80. You don't need the bullet when you got the ballot. Are you up for the downstroke, CC? Chocolate City. Are you with me out there? And when they come to march on you, tell them to make sure they got their James Brown pass. And don't be surprised if Ali is in the White House. Reverend Ike, Secretary of the Treasury. Richard Pryor, Minister of Education. Stevie Wonder, Secretary of Fine Arts. And Miss Aretha Franklin, the First Lady. Are you out there, CC? A Chocolate City is no dream. It's my piece of the rock. And I dig you, CC. God bless Chocolate City and its vanilla suburbs. Can y'all get to that? In your stuff. Can't get enough. Be more fun. Be more fun. And we funky too. Right on, Chocolate City. New York, I'm told.
Not that you would have missed much, because as usual, the engineering on those records was just phenomenal and clear as a bell. But I love this bit of verse. And when they come to march on you, telling them to make sure they got their James Brown pass. And don't be surprised if Ali is in the White House. Reverend Ike, Secretary of the Treasury. Richard Pryor, Minister of Education. Stevie Wonder, Secretary of Fine Arts. And Miss Aretha Franklin, the First Lady. Are you out there, CC? A Chocolate City is no dream. It's my piece of the rock, and I dig you, CC. And I, this, you know, this is the kind of lyrical thing that I think influenced tracks like Fear of a Black Planet. Public Enemy. I still reckon it's one of the greatest rap records ever, if you want to categorize something. It's just, I don't know of much in that genre that was ever any better than that record. And, you know, Bob said he wants to have Barack Obama play this at his inauguration just to watch the rednecks and the racists cringe and go nuts. And I'd love it. I'd absolutely love it. And what killer players! I mean, that whole outro section, you know, that trade-off between the piano and the string synthesizer. I mean, just, that's musicianship. That is such unbelievable musicianship, and then all backed up with Bootsy Collins and that absolutely insane bass playing. Parliament is still, in my mind, one of the greatest examples of pushing the envelope of music and trusting your audience to come along for the ride. One of the best experiences I ever had working as a stagehand or a technician was many, many, many years ago, one of the first years of Lollapalooza. Parliament and the P-Funk All-Stars, George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars played. And the only reason that they didn't call it Parliament or Funkadelic was because Bootsy Collins was doing a solo project. And it exposed this great music and this great voice of a population to middle-class white grunge America. You know, this is the days of, you know, early Smashing Pumpkins. In fact, Pumpkins were the headliner that year. The Beastie Boys. Who else was on that run? Having to dig back into the deep memory, but you know, it was early on in George Clinton going out to this audience. And you know, the half of the audience was kind of, you know, a bit spellbound and going, who's this huge, enormous black man in a white wedding gown playing guitar? And just, you know, and you know, George Clinton, who's this guy with the mad hair, with the purple streaks and the afro and the, and you know, getting their first exposure of the mothership. And it's just wonderful. And boy, it's as though I conjured him. Our good friend David from Maine is on the line. Welcome aboard, mate. I should have known you'd ring in when you heard Parliament.
I'm like the biggest P-Funk, or one of the biggest P-Funk fans, at least in Maine. I've seen him at least 4 or 5 times. I saw him at Lollapalooza, and then I saw him at New York. And no live people, but on New York, they don't report this in the paper. I talked to you before this before, John, but this is true. I don't do drugs, by the way, before I tell you this story. But, no, I think it's important. I don't know if people know, but George Clinton is a real fan of what Ben Birch was talking about, that book, Illuminatus, with Robert Anton
yeah.
Wilson. And he believes in a lot of theories to do with alien extraterrestrial. And also, he was in a religious cult called The Process, which involved worshiping God and Satan at the same time. I can't make this up, okay? But anyways, allegedly, the story of Mother Connection, what happened is, the reason why George went on that kick, I happen to believe it was because He was checking out Sun Ra at the time. But, you know, there is another story that Bootsy and George were driving in Canada, and they allegedly ran into a UFO on the road. And Bootsy claims it's 100% true, and Bootsy's known being for a stand-up guy, and I kind of believe him. And this kind of ties into with the extraterrestrial thing that I'm talking about. So I went to go see George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars in New York, July 4th, I think it was 1997.
Right.
So I took a friend. I said, well, we're going to go see him. He goes, yeah, but we don't have any money. He goes, I don't have any money for tickets. He's like, we don't need that. We can just stand outside in the field. So we're like, all right. I mean, they probably won't. We can probably see enough. So we did get there, and there were a lot of people, as expected, concert in the park. And a lot of people did come for free who didn't want to pay, like, the $50 or $60. Bootsy was there. You know, Bernie Worrell. It was like the mothership reunion. Now, that's the important
right.
thing when I say the mothership reunion, because when they brought the mothership down, no lie, people, there were actually flaming orbs in the sky. People were pointing up at them, and they were like, wow, look at that. And then they just had these spotlights hit the ground, and the lights were going crazy in the sky. Like, the extraterrestrials had timed it and aligned it to this concert, to this moment where they brought the mothership back finally. And it was like everything was synchronized. It wasn't in the paper, but George Clinton did make a mention of it like 8 years later. He said there was some remote control robots flying in the sky or something. And but I guess the reason why I'm telling you this is because those guys, especially Bootsy and George, have a way of summoning up this this type of weird, strange energy, these visions that they brought together, that they manifested. They brought it out there, and you know, it like I said, nobody mentioned it in the paper. Not many people really talked about it. It was just kind of like a silent, secretive thing. And I, like I said, I wasn't tripping or anything. There was actually UFO lights in the sky during when the mothership. Well, in case people don't know, there's a huge spaceship prop that George bought back that was repossessed in the junkyard that they used to use in the 70s. And to tie it all in, CC, Chocolate City, he's actually talking about Washington, D.C. It was just his
yep.
pun on words, you see? So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So when he put that all together, to me, he's a conceptual genius. And there's also a documentary coming out of what I call the co-pilot genius, who doesn't get enough credit, which is the keyboardist, who is also a keyboardist for Talking Heads. Bernie Worrell. The documentary.
Oh, yeah.
The documentary is called Stranger on Earth, and Bernie Worrell doesn't do a lot of recording projects, but when he does, it's kind of like an event, and he's working, and it shows him. I believe Bernie Worrell. He was a classical prodigy at like age 5, and he was let into the conservatory, and he's playing Bach by then too. He's also
yeah.
a great studying purveyor of Thelonious Monk and Sun Ra and Rustan Roland Kirk, and he can replay all of these legends at the drop of the dime. Amazing keyboardist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's an amazing keyboardist. And you know, yeah, I do believe you're right about the classical prodigy angle.
Yeah.
And then his influences of the real jazz experimenters like Thelonious Monk, really show. I mean, I that whole outro of Chocolate City, you know,
yeah.
the piano and that string keyboard, that's him. And he's basically trading between two halves of his brain.
I'll put it this way. If Bernie Worrell didn't exist, you wouldn't have had Dr. Dre.
Right.
And the Chronic. So for people to understand that, if you know who Dr. Dre is, a lot of people know who Dr. Dre is, well, you wouldn't have had that movement of the Chronic, because it was that kind of direct inspiration of his energy and his arrangement and his rhythms on keyboards that inspired a lot of producers. To me, I think like 90% of all the Parliament stuff and also 90% of all the Funkadelic stuff is all co-produced by Bernie Worrell. Even though he never got credit for it, you can tell he was the main man in the studio as well, sitting by George telling, okay, we got to do this and this and that. We can arrange it like this. And, yeah, but Bernie Worrell is a legend. I've seen him live once solo, and there's also for those people who are interested in Parliament Funkadelic, there's also some demos out there that are floating around, four discs of demos and outtakes that aren't available to public, and I think they're available on some forums and stuff, and they're pretty cool. If anyone wants to check them out, I'll send them to you, John, and just say to people you didn't get them from John, you know.
Well, I do believe
they're out there. I mean, that's the best I can say about it. But yeah, I'm a huge George Clinton fan. You know, John. One of these days, one of the tracks of the days you got to play is you got to play the studio version of Maggot Brain.
I do believe I have it. I'll put that into the queue. And I actually think, you know, you mentioned that Worrell didn't really get credit. I do believe, though, when I was auditioning the track earlier, my Windows Media Player, I do believe actually credited him as the composer of Chocolate City, and what's his name from New Orleans, you know, caught such flack for, you know, bringing that song back up again, you know, saying, you know, he wanted New Orleans to be a chocolate city.
Ray Nagin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ray Nagin caught massive flack. And, you know, talk about completely missing the whole point. You know, it's Chocolate City with the vanilla suburbs. And that's just that's a mirror on America.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that's where my, you know, to let on people on a secret, if you check out the forums, my member name is Think. It ain't illegal yet, and that's a Clintonianism. And I'm not talking about Bill Clinton. I'm talking about George Clinton. You know, so if people want to know how deep I'm into them, I mean, I'm not joking, people. I have all his albums. I have all the Parliament albums. I have all the Funkadelic albums. You can't stump me.
Well, you probably know much more than I do.
I have all the bad albums too. The terrible, overproduced where he does a.
Yeah, they had a few of those.
Where Prince signed him for some drugs or something. I don't know what he signed him for.
Well, and you know, Clinton also went and, you know, was the host of, what was it, The Outer Limits for a while? That TV show?
That. You know, that's almost impossible to find. There's a great interview with, it's funny you bring that up, there's a great interview with Reggie Hudlin, one of my friends who's a musician's site. He worked with Miles Davis. He's a music director, Foley, and he also plays the drums in P-Funk All Stars now. But anyways, Reggie Hudlin is the guy who created that. Is called Cosmic Slop, which again was the name of
the production company.
Of a Funkadelic song also, and Cosmic Slop is about comparing prostitutes to an extraterrestrial orgy. It's a song done in a dark key, and it's meant to symbolize a lot of the tragedy of prostitution, and that's the kind of deep person that Clinton was as well. If you guys see the album cover and the artwork for Cosmic Slop, John, I don't know if you've ever checked it out, but Pedro Bell. There's another genius. You know, it's like? It's like it's like everything was all in one with the Funkadelic and Parliament, like how Grateful Dead cared about art, like how Pink Floyd cared about the artwork.
Yep.
Funkadelic, they cared about the artwork as much as Yes did, you know, with the great paintings that, what was this guy's name? Roger Dean? Not Roger Dean, but whatever his name was, he had those complete surreal landscapes. You know what I'm talking about, but all the Yes covers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Pedro Bell was the same way, but he did it in a style of, like, I would call it graffiti contemporary. And mm-hmm. he really, I mean, he was like the Salvador Dali of the P-Funk world.
Tool has done the same thing. I can't think of the guy's name that has done the artwork for the last couple of records.
Yeah.
It's that same all-encompassing, it's not just the audio, it's the visual, it's that tending to the entire package of the atmosphere that you're looking to create, you know. And I love the 10,000 Days cover, you know. You open up the CD cover and it's a 3D viewer, so you can actually view all the artwork in 3D, and it's not that silly red and blue lens thing. It's actually a forced perspective, clear lens thing built into the cover. And I can't think of the guy's name, and he does amazing kind of odd surrealistic human artwork.
Before I go, I have another story, but I just wanted to say one last thing about the George Clinton thing. He also mastered, for those people who aren't in the know and don't know the records, he also mastered the multiple record contract deal pseudonym-type moniker of different acts under one umbrella. He was the first one to do that. Like, he would go to CBS, he would go to Warner Brothers, and basically, mm-hmm. all the same people played on the same record. In fact, if people know Zap, which was More Bounce to the Ounce, and all of that, that was a George Clinton production. And that was basically Bootsy assembling a lot of people and telling them, okay, you guys got the songs right here, I'm going to take you to... And they were basically under the P-Funk umbrella, too. So it was kind of like this autonomous type of amorphous energy, just going from label to label to label. It didn't matter who was singing, and it didn't matter who was playing, just as long as they were associated with that group.
Yeah, you know, it's actually creating a production and art community,
right?
And then utilizing that to create different projects for whatever reason. And, you know, I can make the connection again with you know, like Maynard and Tool. You know,
right.
Those guys have so many different it's Perfect Circle. You know, there's all these different offshoot projects. And, you know, it includes guys, you know, connected to Nine Inch Nails and, you know, and similar with the way that Trent Reznor doing the Saul Williams thing, you know, creating these places and these vehicles built around people to create newer, better art. And my favorite kind of art, whether it's music, visual art, you know, whatever it is doing it for the art's sake. And then you get the best, you know, a terrible word, but product. You produce the best of your art when you're doing it for the art's sake, not for the commercial sake. But then, you know, these people know then how to market themselves to get the message across, and then the masses come and buy it up like bloody hotcakes. You know, I have so much respect for people that do this kind of thing. And here we go. Gail's just sent me an email. Alex Gray is the artist for Tool. And he does amazing stuff. The cover for Lateralis, it's that clear plastic booklet, and it's a multi-layered, you know, human form, you know, with the third eye and the fire in the head and all that kind of thing, and it visually represents the spirituality that Maynard particularly kind of has a very good grasp on, you know, and I just love that kind of stuff.
Did I ever send you that Tool video of the Fibonacci sequence?
Oh, yeah. See,
I need to post that on the forum so people can look at that.
Yeah, because you know, it's actually the Lateralis track.
Yeah.
That the whole rhythm sequence is built on Fibonacci. And I remember when that album first came out, my mate Scott and I sat there. We were sharing a flat at the time. And, you know, Scott and I, you know, still do this thing, you know, very, very old school. You can kind of tell the generation that we come from. Something like that, like Tool puts out a record, you know, where you got to wait 3-5 years for the project to be complete.
Right.
And when, you know, he comes walking in, you know, he'd been on tour. I think he'd been out with Pantera. And he comes walking in and he goes, "Revere me." And he's holding Lateralis. And we sat down and listened to it from beginning to end and had a listening party.
Yeah.
And, you know, I immediately grabbed onto, oh, a lot of this is, you know, bass 5 and bass 10. Okay, I got that. And then Lateralis kicks in. And, you know, I'm an old drummer, and I love complex time signature stuff. And I'm sitting there just kind of tapping stuff out. And every time I work something out, it's not quite right. And then it shifts on me. And finally, he rings me up from the audio production house that he was working for at the time, and he says, "I have the answer." And I go, "Oh God, what is it?" He goes, "It took a mathematician to figure it out." And he goes, "It's based on Fibonacci." And I'm going,
"Yeah,
Fibonacci. I remember this. He goes, "Yeah, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8. And I'm going, "You're kidding." And he goes, and then he says, "Count the number of syllables in each stanza." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And the fact that they're able to turn something that is so seemingly random, and this is the beauty of Fibonacci when it comes to nature and music. I mean, the musical scale is based on the breakup of the frequencies for the our 12-note scale is
right.
Based generally on Fibonacci. And the fact that you can take this thing that is seemingly somewhat random and never even, and yet you can end up creating a consistent sub-rhythm with it. And, you know, you can still groove to it. And to me, that's magic. That's absolute magic.
I think what was amazing who did the YouTube video was the way they figured out astrologically by the stars and the galaxies. I don't know if you did you see the whole thing?
Yes. Oh, it's great. Actually, that track
like
isn't
I said,
Lateralis.
When people see it on the forum, they'll be like, "Oh my God," because it shows a lot of work. Whoever did that video. The last thing I wanted to mention was a bit of activism. This artist named Banksy, he pulled one of the biggest pranks on London this weekend. You know how they have surveillance cameras on the streets of London now, everywhere, basically in every city?
Yeah,
they probably have one attached to my cat, and I don't know. But anyways, speaking of that, I have a great video up now called Engineering of the Cats that you guys got to see it. It's about engineers and the humor of having cats as pets. You got to see it. It's funny as all hell. But anyway, so this artist named Banksy, who I believe I told you about, who also did was in charge of the prank Paris Hilton skit, where he changed about 100 Paris Hilton CDs and photoshopped Paris Hilton's dog's head on top of her body.
Oh, I'm very familiar with Banksy. I used his artwork as all the masthead images for one of the websites that I administer. I'm well.
I
all those wonderful bits of graffiti art that he did on the wall between Israel and Palestine. You know,
right.
the ones where he paints like the holes in the wall with the sun shining through and the kids with the buckets. I actually Gail did the manipulation, and if you check out AnthonyLowenstein.com, good friend of mine, author, you'll see that the masthead images are all those Banksy images. And because his focus is the Israel-Palestine thing,
right.
they were just he sent it to me. He goes, "Could we use this?"
Right.
And I was just like, "Oh yeah, we'll use that." And amazingly effective. And I love his style. And one of the things that I find somewhat disturbing now is when he goes and does a piece of artwork, like in the UK,
yeah,
people actually go and remove the wall and stick it on eBay.
Well, what he's done on this one, and I believe it's probably one of the most historical examples of modern art in protest and graffiti to this day. What he did was he actually did the artwork undercover while the surveillance cameras were watching him, and they didn't know that he was doing it, and he tagged up a three-story building, and it says, "Stop the CCTV." And it has this... Wait. I'll tell you what's even crazier. It has... He tagged up a policeman on the building looking up like he's about to protest someone, where this kid... He painted this kid on a ladder, and he's spraying up to stop the CCTV, and it looks like the cop's about to call on the kid.
Yeah, I've seen that bit of artwork. He's amazing, and I mean,
yeah,
he's done stuff all over the world, you know. And I think it's just actually either Banksy.com or Banksy.co.uk,
right,
where you can see, you know, a great selection of the stuff that he's done, and it's broken down into locations and styles. And one of my favorite bits, which is almost one of his most innocuous ones, is in the UK, there's the two male police officers embraced kissing.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
And it stops traffic. It's amazing stuff.
I'm surprised he hasn't gone to Gitmo yet.
He's amazingly... kept himself out of the limelight,
yeah,
you know, and maintained that covert,
yeah,
vibe.
Yeah, he's kept himself out of the crosshairs and done a lot of work. I guess the Paris Hilton CD, that's a collector's item. I guess he changed the music too on it as well. like some of the titles of the songs, like "I'm Worthless," "Why Am I Here?"
That's amazing.
But anyways, on that note, I just wanted to call in and talk about the P-Funk thing. I know you have other things to talk about and move on. And also, I'm going to post that for people to check out, that Engineering of Cats. It's at the forum, and you guys should check it out. It's like a 6-minute video, and it's really funny. And there's a part in it for if you're an engineer or you're an artistic nerd type or anything, you really get a kick out of this video, because I think it's well done and it's well written and great acting from the cast. I mean, just great shots all over the place.
I will be checking it out. And if you were at the forum, I don't know if you saw it, and this is like completely much more light. I posted a video of this great, there's two of them, Sam's Cats, and there's one, I've posted them both, but you'll see the title of the thread is Sam's Cat in Let Me In, and they're these great just pencil sketch animations. And for any cat owner, this, it nails cat ownership to a T, and they are just absolutely hysterical. There's the Wake Up Cat, and there's Let Me In, and just to have a check on those. They're very lighthearted, but absolutely hysterical, and any cat owner will just roll over laughing.
That's awesome. We'll have to talk more about the P-Funk another day. If you highlight Maggot Brain, I can tell you some related stories,
yeah,
that or whatever.
We'll stick Maggot Brain on for next week, and get your stories together, and you can ring in.
But John, it was great talking to you as always, and just keep doing what you're doing, and keep people inspired, and keep everything creative, and just keep everything positive, and I think everything has a purpose after that. So
thanks, man. I appreciate that, and always appreciate you ringing in. You, like I said, I say it time and time again, you always have something to bring to the table, and it's a great thing. So you take care of yourself, mate, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, Bob. I'll meet you, John, later.
Oh, you know,
now I'm merging the two. That's the problem. I call you Jabob.
Jabob. Yeah. Jabob. It's Bob's Jamaican nickname.
Yeah.
All right, man, you take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, that was our good mate, Dave from Maine. I know he's a huge P-Funk fan, and, you know, it's just great stuff. It's just such great stuff. And if you get a chance, just Google search Alex Gray. He's got a website as well, and you can see some of his artwork, and it's really, really... it's its own thing, and I like that. You know, I dig when people do whatever is their own thing. So anyway, we're going to move on. Floating around the web recently, and you can find this at Google Video, and I suggest taking 2 hours of your time to view The World According to Monsanto. And we actually got this. Some of this came up actually on... Grace and Rama's program Sunday night regarding Monsanto, the patenting of the building blocks of life and genetically modified crops. And the film is amazing. It's a French documentary revoiced in English. You can find it easily at Google Video. I think it was even posted to the Head On blog a couple weeks ago. And Gail and I finally sat down and watched this on Sunday. And this is one of those situations, like Bob says, you know, there are certain people, if they tell you that the sky's blue, I'd have to actually walk outside, look up to make sure that it actually wasn't purple. I would never believe anything Monsanto ever says. This has got to be one of the most deceitful, evil companies. Now, you know, these are the people that make that, you know, Roundup, the most widely used herbicide on the planet. Now, because they have this herbicide that just kind of kills everything, they now make and have been making for quite a few years Roundup ready plants, Roundup ready soybeans, Roundup ready corn. Now they have to design the stuff so that when you buy their modified seed, it can resist the Roundup, so it only attacks the weeds. You know, sounds all kind of very innocuous and very clever. However, none of this stuff has actually been properly tested. And when it is, going back to the first Bush administration, and actually back to when George Bush the First was still vice president, in that whole deregulation, you know, atmosphere, part of it was having to push biotech. And they... things were orchestrated so that these modified crops wouldn't actually be properly scrutinized. They came up with dodgy terminology of, you know, sufficiently similar. You know, these crops are sufficiently similar to their original crops that they don't actually need to be tested for human safety. Now, one of the biggest products that Monsanto sells is bovine growth hormone. You know, the stuff that dairy cows are shot up with to produce more milk. And there's really not a milk shortage. But this has caused major health problems in a lot of places. Not only that, it creates problems with the udders and infections for the cows. So there's pus in your milk. Now, one thing that you got to understand, this hormone is illegal in almost every part of the world except for the United States. Monsanto spends great amounts of money to buy scientists. And Canadian scientists came out in the late 90s to say that they were offered millions of dollars for research, but what it was a bribe. And they weren't going to take the bribe. So they went in front of the Canadian Congress, whatever it is, and blew the whistle. And from them blowing the whistle, this hormone was made illegal in Canada. Now, this is interesting because the Canadian FDA usually models most of their legislation off of the United States. Well, Monsanto has been falsifying research results for years. Okay? You can look up Dioxin West Virginia. And when a plant exploded there, they falsified the results, actually taking exposed people and putting them in the unexposed lot, so that they could say, oh, the cancer was equal in both sides, so obviously the dioxins are not harmful. Now, we know that dioxins are some of the most harmful chemicals on the planet to human life. Now, I know I'm kind of going all over the block here, but I mean, it's to give you an idea. You know, many of you know, but it gives you an idea of just how widespread the influence of Monsanto is. Now, when we get into stuff like Roundup Ready corn, you sign, a farmer who plants this stuff signs a deal that for their copyright on this Roundup Ready corn or Roundup Ready soybeans, they can't save their seed because it's intellectual property. But there's this problem. Nature doesn't abide by patent agreements and contracts. Pollen gets blown around, and non-GM crops become cross-pollinated with GM crops. And what you're having now is Monsanto muscling in on farmers who are not using their corn but have, you know, heritage varieties that have now been cross-pollinated, and because they can track these little gene tweaks that they do, demanding and strong-arming and threatening farmers with legal action and saying, do not challenge us, you cannot challenge us, you better settle out of court and sign on and start paying for your seed. This kind of activity is just so unbelievably shameful. And I've got an article here from Vanity Fair, Monsanto's Harvest of Fear, and we're running out of time, but I'm hardly going to be able to get into this. But on the blog post today, thank you, ELO, you will see a link to this. You need to read this article. And just the opening says, Monsanto already dominates America's food chain with its genetically modified seeds. Now it has targeted milk production, just as frightening as the corporation's tactics, ruthless legal battles against small farmers, is its decade-long history of toxic contamination. Okay? I mean, these folks profit hugely, and it's by coercion. And they talk about Gary Reinhart, who has been strong-armed, and he's in the film. He's been strong-armed because some of this genetically modified soy has cross-pollinated with his heritage seeds that he has every right to save. And, I mean, this guy's been farming for generations. His family has been farming for generations. This is Kansas City. And he's basically been forced to pay out to Monsanto for things that they don't actually have a right to. But because some of their seed cross-pollinated with his, they now own the rights to what he's got. And if you watch the film, you will see that, you know, GM products are pretty well banned, or GM crops are pretty well banned in Mexico. But because of the free trade agreement, there's lots of U.S. genetically modified corn for sale in the United States. So someone buys corn, brings it home. On the way home, a few kernels fall, and they germinate. And now, these century-old varieties of Mexican corn are now showing that they have been cross-pollinated by this GM stuff. So what's going to happen to these people? People who have made their lives on growing these heritage varieties of corn, you know, the blue stuff, some of them. And they grow strange. They grow weird. You know, you're only supposed to have one ear per stalk or branch, and these you see like three. And these are from, and the Mexicans have done tests on their own and have verified that the genetically modified varieties have infiltrated centuries old varieties of corn. So what's going to happen to these people? They're going to end up having to pay royalties to a company who has poisoned their livelihood. If there's ever a corporation that needs to go down and need to go down now, it is Monsanto. But the United States government kisses up to these sons of bitches in ways that are absolutely horrible. The idea that you can patent the building blocks of life should be against every religion on the planet and against the greater values of humanity. And the thing is that they promote them of larger yields, this and that. Just look at India. The rate of suicides from Indian cotton farmers who started growing this thing called BT cotton, that after a few months, it's no longer resistant. So then you have to go and buy the insecticides anyway that the strain was supposed to, you know, blah. And then Monsanto gets a commission off of everything they grow. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. I think I'm going to hold on to this for tomorrow because I've hardly even been able to get into it. I actually want to read into this piece a little bit, and we'll save this for tomorrow. So just, but go ahead and read it tonight or tomorrow if you have time. Watch The World According to Monsanto. You can find it at Google Video. It will absolutely freak you out. And again, the people are kept stupid. They don't know what's going on. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. And after watching it, you know, I went to the fridge and I pulled out my 2-liter carton of beautiful, unhomogenized, purely organic milk. Poured a huge glass and said, thank goodness that stuff is illegal here. And the fact that I can drink this and you folks in the United States can't is madness. And that's one of the things that's adding to the cost of your milk. Not just the petrol, but they got to buy this stuff because they've been convinced that it's necessary for high yields. And more pus. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And this is actually threat. They talk about national security. This is food security. Food security. Going to get to the point, once this stuff gets everywhere, that you're not going to be able to save your own seed and grow your own food. And who's going to get hit first and worst? The poor, as always happens. And I'm told that this week's Horn poll at the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, is an environmental-related poll. I will be checking it out. I will be voting. Please stop by and check it out. Don't forget to check out the forum and check out the videos that David said he was going to post, and also check out Sam's cat in Let Me In, give you a great laugh. And we'll pick this up tomorrow. I think we should maybe spend a couple of days on Monsanto and this whole GM thing. Because people need to know. And send the link to that film, once you've watched it, to everyone you know, especially the stupid right-wingers who think, ah, it's all business. It's all business. Anything for business is good. Bullshit. They're profiting off of hurting you and your children. And until you wake up, you're just going to be the sick, poor fool. Ha! Ah! But yeah, Monsanto, evil. Monsanto, evil. It's that simple. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thanks to ELO for posting to the blog for me. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thanks to CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Thanks to Ben Birch at White Rose for everything that he does for us. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why.